The Western Conference Finals are set. The Rockets and the Warriors close out their series tonight.
And James Borrego was hired by Charlotte. We've got the reaction from Locked On Hornets. And is Dwayne Casey going to be out in Toronto?
Unbelievable. And Philly, Boston, closeout game maybe? Let's talk about it. It's the Locked On NBA podcast.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Okay, here we go. Western Conference Finals are set. It's in the books. We've got a lot to talk about tonight. I am John Corrales of the Locked On Celtics podcast and RedsArmy.com and Boston.com.
And I'm Jake Madison at NolaJake on Twitter, host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast, editor over at LockedOnPelicans.com and credential member of the media here in the Big Easy.
Yeah, let's start. Let's save your game for last here. Let's get this other one out of the way. Utah, Houston, game five. Rockets win 112-102. A monster fourth quarter for Chris Paul. And he finally gets himself to the conference finals. The final numbers for Chris Paul here, amazing.
They're just unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, the type of game that in a closeout situation that you finally hope that he would come up with. 41 points, 10 assists, 7 rebounds. And I think this game is exactly why they got Chris Paul, because he said after the game that Harden was under the weather. And so in a situation like this where James Harden either couldn't or, depending on how some people think, wouldn't be the guy, he can step up. And also, if you look at the shot charts, he's the guy throughout the series that when the Rockets were dared to make mid-range shots, he's the guy who made the mid-range shots. The guys talked about this yesterday on the Locked On NBA podcast. It's one of my points of contention when defending the Rockets, and this is where that Chris Paul acquisition was so important, and I just kind of wondered how that would go. This is it. He's the guy that would take the shots that they never really wanted to take, and if he's doing that, they're hard to defend.
No, this was just a vintage Chris Paul game. You mentioned the numbers and everything, but you might have left out the most important one, which was zero turnovers in this. Right. He was outstanding. Like you said, that mid-range game was going in, and he used that to kind of soften up the Jazz defense. He has that butt-out dribble where he can create space when people are on him from behind. It's just a tremendous night, and he needed this kind of game for his career. And those kind of mid-range jumpers and everything completely froze Gobert. Gobert was switching out onto the perimeter, didn't know what to do there, was so afraid of that mid-range jumper from him that he's hanging out in no man's land, not in the paint, not on the three-point line, and that might have neutralized at least defensively the biggest advantage the Jazz have.
I'm just going to crow a little bit, because that's exactly what I was talking about when it comes to the Jazz. To the Rockets or the notion of being so three and layup heavy. Like you said, that mid-range is the body blow like in a boxing match, and you've got to be able to take that shot and make it, even if it's slightly less than efficient. If you've got guys that can make that shot, you have to take it, because exactly what you saw happen tonight, drawing Gobert out. Now you can get to the rim. Now you can finally get there, because if you look at the assists that Chris Paul had, he had a bunch of them for layups, because Gobert is now playing in a space he's not comfortable with. And the Rockets all series long did a great job of getting Gobert out of his comfort zone, getting further away from the basket, and that's a point now of emphasis for Gobert to become a better defender in that space over the summer, because moving forward, this is a blueprint now. You're playing the Rockets, you're playing Gobert. If you're not able to pull him out of that paint, then you risk having a potential defensive player of the year level guy. If you can pull him away, if you find a way to do that, then the Jazz can be beaten.
Yeah, and we've seen the impact he makes with the Jazz defensively, what their defensive rating is with him on the court versus off. And, I mean, you can see it. It passes the eye test, too. But there are ways to beat it, and Chris Paul really did that in a game where James Harden didn't really ever get going. They got some help from some of the other guys, but they looked a little bit vulnerable in this game, particularly in the third, because the other story of this one was Donovan Mitchell, 22 points in the third quarter, then had the injury where he left the game, looked like his knee hit James Harden. He came back out, didn't have shoes on. I think had a flip-flop on or something like that. And basically when that happened, you knew they were sunk in this game.
Yeah, they said afterwards he was walking around in a boot. No crutches, but a boot. Sad that that's how it ended for Mitchell. But, man, he was really the reason why they were even fighting in this series. And the fact that they won a game, the kid is really, really special. I know you've made note in this in our pregame preparation, all of these injuries. Not
brutal for him.
Not many people are going to be talking about that Dante Exum injury. That one is a killer. Like that one more than, I mean, as much as Rubio being out, the Exum injury really hurt them.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest one here. It allows just Donovan Mitchell to do other things and be kind of the one-dimensional scorer we're seeing, which is when he's a little bit easier to defend. And even when he was doing that tonight, he was lights out and just – he is going to be something so special in the league. But Exum not being in there, you can't put him in different spots because you just kind of know what he's got to do, and that's the only offense they really had. And it just makes him easier to defend. And even then, he was still lighting him up, and there wasn't much they could do. So imagine if they were more multidimensional in this. Maybe the end of the game would have been different, but all of a sudden, you know, Utah was playing their game. That injury happened. The pace kind of gets away from them at times, goes in favor of the Rockets, and that was that. Also, doesn't help. Ingles was in a bit of foul trouble, which threw him out, made him less aggressive, too.
Yeah, so, but look, hey, Utah Jazz, hell of a season, man. Hell of a season. They got a lot to be proud of. They've got a lot to build on. Look, Joe Ingles has proven himself to be really, really good. And that he's earned that contract. Mitchell is obviously a stud. Gobert is a stud. They've got, and he's got a lot of work that he can still get better. But the Rockets are moving on to face the Golden State Warriors, who beat the Pelicans 113-104 in a game. It was typical Warriors, sloppy, they a little disinterested. Third quarter, they came out and just dropped the hammer.
Oh, it was brutal.
Oh my God. Third quarter Warriors this year have been monsters. And then they kind of let up a little bit in the fourth quarter. And to the credit of your Pelicans, Jake, they came back and made this a little scary at the end.
Yeah, it was closer than it probably should have been. I don't think there was any real doubt the Warriors are going to win this late, but after a sloppy first quarter for the Pelicans, they had some hot three-point shooting that kept them in it. They were only down, I think, 5 at that point. You felt good, and then all of a sudden, in the second quarter, they get back to being the Pelicans that we all know, playing fast, playing in transition, not playing in the half court where they can do nothing against that set Warriors defense. When you have length at every position like they do, they can just swallow up Drew Holiday. They have one of the few guys in the league who actually gives Anthony Davis a lot of trouble, and they made this one really close by playing their style of ball, and that just woke the sleeping giant up that was the Warriors. It always seems like they need a little bit of adversity in a game or in a series to get them playing their best, and like you said, dropped the hammer in that third quarter where the Pels could do nothing. It was 36-19 in favor of Golden State, and it looked like this was going to be a blowout. They were up by 26 till New Orleans, kind of out of nowhere, just the no quitting them goes on an 8-2 run over 6.5 minutes late in the fourth quarter to make this one. You know, they took the 26-point lead, whittled it down to 7. At that point, you kind of ran out of gas, and there wasn't much they could do. But no quitting Drew Holiday, who had a triple-double in this game, 27 points, 11 assists, 10 rebounds, and then Anthony Davis, who put up 34 and 19. They tried hard. It's kind of what you said about the Jazz. This was a really good year for the Pelicans. I think most people left them for dead. I did included, to be honest, after the DeMarcus Cousins injury. You reinvent yourself. You get a sweep in the first round. You make it this far. You took a game off the Warriors. You played them tough in all but really one game this series. You've got to be happy with that.
I would be. They very much like my Celtics were written off after a star's injury, and to their credit, they bound together and they got some great play. Drew was awesome in the playoffs. We had playoff Rondo, although I think that magic kind of ran out against the Warriors.
Didn't play in the fourth in this one, and probably didn't need a. It's interesting to see that though, because he's got this reputation, but then you see him being kind of benched in the fourth as he should have been, and he's still out there coaching these guys up, so involved, not sulking, not doing anything like that, and doing everything he can to help his team win. That's still kind of playoff Rondo, even if it's not on the court, right?
Yeah, he sees the game in a. I don't even want to say advanced way, because that doesn't even do it justice. He really has a savant type of quality to how he sees the game. I love hearing the mic'd up Rondo.
Oh, it's awesome.
You just realize how smart he is. And maybe you think he's a jerk, and maybe his career could have gone differently, but still, the level of basketball intelligence is unquestioned. It's impossible to find a smarter basketball mind in the NBA. I wonder what he's going to do for the rest of his career, but that's another story for another time, as is what will the Pelicans do moving forward. We don't want to bog down the show right now. We just know that the Warriors are ready to take on the Rockets, and curious to see what wins out. And do the Warriors now suddenly get up and start playing a full 48? Do they slack at all? Do they want to send a message and go out there and just demolish the Rockets? Or can the Rockets and their style, really their more individual style, can that succeed against the Warriors defense?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think my early prediction on this is I don't think the Warriors are really scared of the Rockets, though I also thought things were kind of going to be fine in Toronto in this playoff series, so maybe you guys shouldn't listen to me whatsoever. Yeah, well, we're going to touch on that in a minute. I don't know. This is going to be fun because this is the battle we've wanted to see all season long, and we're finally getting it. We're not going to dive into a preview here, but I just hope it lives up to it, and I kind of have a feeling it's not going to.
Yeah, I have a fear that the Warriors are going to kind of like hulk up. I don't want that to be the case. I want this to go seven. I want this to be the epic matchup. I don't know.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, we'll see. Let's move on. But first of all, I want to ask you, dear listener, are you enjoying this Locked On NBA podcast? Maybe you are a follower of Jake Madison. Maybe you're one of my Locked On Celtics followers. And now you're here taking in this Locked On NBA show. Well, we're here for you 7 days a week. So please subscribe to the Locked On NBA podcast, because we've got a rotating crew of hosts. We start out with the biggest stories from the local experts on Monday, and then we roll through the week with a bunch of different perspectives, the recaps, whatever. We got a lot of fun moving forward for the offseason. There's a ton going on in the NBA on a daily basis. So please subscribe to the Locked On NBA podcast for your daily dose of the league from our experts on the Locked On podcast network. Coaching carousel, now one less seat. James Borrego hired by the Charlotte Hornets. Let's turn it to our local expert, Walker Mail from the Locked On Hornets podcast.
I'm Walker Mail of the Locked On Hornets podcast. The Charlotte Hornets now have selected James Borrego as their new head coach. Again, this is coming after the Hornets had finalized a couple of head coaching candidates in the Spurs assistant James Borrego and the Celtics assistant Jay Larinaga. Again, Adrian Wojnarowski just reporting that James Borrego would be the new head coach for the Charlotte Hornets. Now, Borrego comes in having had 10 years of experience under Greg Popovich, did serve a short stint with the Orlando Magic under Jacques Vaughn, eventually taking over for him when he was let go by the Magic, and accumulating a 10-20 record as the interim head coach. Of course, Scott Skiles comes in with Orlando to become the new head coach, and Borrego goes back to the San Antonio Spurs to serve under Greg Popovich. Also served under Monty Williams for a brief stint with the New Orleans then Hornets. Monty Williams, of course, coming also from that Greg Popovich tree. So James Borrego has a little bit of head coaching experience as the interim head coach with Orlando, but also a ton of experience under what a lot of people consider to be the best coach in today's NBA and maybe of all time, and Greg Popovich. So Borrego now replaces Steve Clifford, who was fired at the end of this regular season as Mitch Kupchak, the new general manager of the Charlotte Hornets, came in and decided Steve Clifford's fate. Mitch Kupchak, again, served a long time with the Los Angeles Lakers, about 20 years, and he is at the helm now of the Charlotte Hornets' decision-making as the general manager who now brings in James Borrego. A couple of other questions to go on with the Charlotte Hornets as what their future may look like. You do have Kemba Walker, who was rumored in some trade consideration really before the trade deadline. They held on to him then. It does not mean that he is a surefire thing to stay on this Charlotte Hornets roster, so who knows what Mitch Kupchak decides to do there. You do have, of course, Dwight Howard, who is a guy that is a big man down low that is kind of losing some value in today's NBA but still carries a hefty contract. You wonder what kind of trading partners the Charlotte Hornets could see there. There's a lot of questions for the Charlotte Hornets team, but one that is no longer a question, they did find the answer, at least of now, and that is James Borrego, the San Antonio Spurs former assistant, now the Charlotte Hornets' new head coach. Again, thanks for listening. I'm Walker Mail on the Locked On Hornets podcast.
All right, thanks, Walker. He's the new host of the Locked On Hornets podcast. Go check him out. He's been on the job there for a few weeks, doing a great job. And now, interesting hire by Charlotte, taking Borrego. Now focus here on assistants, Spurs assistants, these culture guys. I'll even say, you know, Fizdale was a short-term head coach. He's very low experienced guy. I think it's kind of interesting to see this trend now, I think, in the NBA, Phoenix hiring Kokoschkov. I think the NBA is kind of moving away from some of the more established names that may be on the market. And with the exception of like a Budenholzer or something, maybe the bigger names. I don't know. What do you think, Jake? I feel like there's a move to kind of find the next big name that maybe looking at the Celtics and Brad Stevens and all of the, you know, all of the love that he's getting, maybe people around the league are kind of hoping to hit it big with one of these assistants that they can get some of that same magic.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. And I love this, by the way. I like the idea of these largely considered very bright assistants up and coming, getting chances to at least prove themselves. Maybe they fail, maybe they don't, but at least they're getting the opportunity to, and we're not seeing the same retread coaches who aren't really bringing a lot to the league. So it's nice to kind of see this, and you also kind of hit it. Look at where these guys are being hired from. It's about culture, and that's clearly what Charlotte's trying to do here. They want a guy who can kind of fix their culture. You heard Steve Clifford talking about how at the end of the season, this team didn't really have the same spirit or fight in them, and they have to correct that course, starting at the top with Kupchak being brought in, trying to kind of remake your organization. I'm big on Borrego, who's an assistant here under Monty Williams in New Orleans for 2 years, does a lot of things right, has had two stints over there in San Antonio. You can't ask for much more than that when you're trying to kind of right the ship, I think.
Yeah, and look, coaching can have different impacts. Maybe there are a few guys that just kind of capture that magic in a bottle. Okay, fine. Some guys are just not meant to be head coaches. Fine. These guys, these assistants, their goal is to just keep everybody engaged for the 82-game process and try to give that structure so guys like Dwight Howard in Charlotte may not be disruptive. And I don't think there was a lot of disruption going on in Charlotte in particular, but Dwight Howard in previous stops has been kind of, you know.
The track record's there.
Right. And when you're looking at the Charlotte situation especially, there's two things that could happen. They're pretty capped out. So there's – that's an understatement.
Yeah, that's a very big understatement.
But so you have either Borrego trying to take a group of people that you have no choice but to run it back with and who should have been better. Can he kind of instill a thing, quote-unquote culture, in those guys to maximize their talent? Or does Charlotte go ahead and trade Kemba Walker, attach one of these other big contracts to Kemba Walker, somehow get and just start it over and build that culture from the ground up? But either way, they're clearly looking to take some of that Spurs magic to bring it to Charlotte and say, hey, kind of show us the way. Take some of those ingredients, some of those recipes that you've learned, and start making some of those dishes over here. Start getting that kind of thing going on in our locker room, and maybe some of that kind of camaraderie, that focus on team first, maybe that stuff can kind of take hold here and we can build something.
Yeah, I think also you've got to keep in mind their cap situation and that they might be blowing it up when you look at this hire too. And I know Borrego had a lot to do with player development in San Antonio. And if you're this, Charlotte team, you're going to have to rely on the draft and second round picks and maybe some undrafted guys potentially to try and get some more out of this roster. You said they should have been better than they were. Yeah, but they're still a long way from really being competitive and they don't have the cap space to really go and do much whatsoever. So you're going to rely on minimum contract guys, young guys that you're bringing in, things like that. I think this is maybe the right coach to maximize those guys, to develop them into solid NBA players. I think that's kind of what they were looking at with this hire here. You know, this is a guy who's been up for a number of jobs now, you know, didn't have the best interim stint over in Orlando a couple of years ago, but I think that was just a disaster of a situation and no one was going to succeed there. I think that's kind of what they're trying to hope to do, bring some of these guys along, get them to mesh with Kemba and Howard and all of those a little bit more. And maybe you're a fringe playoff team, something like that, so at least you can show some success.
Yeah, so we'll see how it goes. I want to shout out Celtics assistant coach Jay Larinaga, who was one of the finalists there. I keep pushing for him to get a job. I've liked what he's done with the Celtics. We'll see. But in general, just to close this part out, I like the trend. I like where teams are going. I like how they're thinking with the new blood. Again, a lot of capable coaches out there, a lot of long-term coaches with good resumes, but nothing wrong with getting some new blood into this mix. I like all of the people that are being interviewed, and we'll see. You can't go wrong with some of these guys getting new ideas and trying something out. One of those guys that does have a long resume who may be out is Toronto Raptors coach Dwayne Casey. The TSN in Canada reports that they're leaning towards getting rid of Casey, who is, by the way, among the front runners for a coach of the year.
Well, that's happened before where we had coach of the year get fired, right? I think I'm blanking on it, but I know that's happened before, recently, right?
Well, I know it happened to Doc Rivers in Orlando, and it happened to George Karl in Denver. It happened a couple of times where guys.
Did it happen in Memphis?
I'm drawing
maybe
a blank on that. I'm drawing a blank.
It's okay. We don't need to look it up.
I know Doc won it in Orlando and then got fired the following year.
But, you know, but I remember Carl. So like this happens and it's weird because like, yeah, they just ran into LeBron, who's playing some of the best basketball of his career. And look, I was so, so wrong about this Raptors team. I thought they were going to be just fine after game one. And I said it on here with you. And yep, you guys, I was wrong about that one. Raptors wrapped it and there's like no other way to put it. So, you know, you look at it and you don't want to make a knee-jerk reaction to this and be like, yeah, we need to just strip this down and try it all different. Because for the most part, this is a coach who completely revolutionized the way his team played, their mindset, their mentality of all of those guys. So he brought new ideas in and he wasn't rooted in the old same things that he's been doing. But at the same point, sometimes you just need some accountability and it's as simple as that. And like someone's got to be the scapegoat and it looks like it might be Casey here. And I can't say I fault them for that thinking.
Yeah, no, look, the Raptors, unfortunately, I hate talking this way about the Raptors. I wanted the Raptors to be better. I wanted, in a perfect world, for the Celtics to face the Raptors in the conference finals. This way I could be happy about either team moving forward because it's time for the Raptors to move forward. But unfortunately, it's not. This is their ceiling. That collapse in game one, watching the end of that game, that was the end of their season right there. They could just never really quite get it right. Even though there were competitive games after that, they just never had the ability to come back and close, do anything to win, actually win one of those games. And so what did the Raptors do? We talked about the Hornets being capped out. Look at the Raptors. They're paying a ton of money That Serge Ibaka contract looks so, so bad.
So bad.
They owe him.
Think they would like to have Tucker instead of him right now?
Oh my God. Yeah. Tucker looked great, but they're paying, look, quick math, $75 million to Lowry, DeRozan, and Ibaka. And then another 15 on top of that, Valanciunas. So that's $90 million to those four guys. That's a core that's not going to do anything. Now, they've got a lot of good young players that they can rely on, and a lot of that money is short money. Pirtle, Anunoby, Miles, these guys have decent they have good contracts, rookie contracts, Van Vliet, Siakam. So there's some balance on the other side, but anyway – bottom line, with all of these numbers that I'm throwing out and getting bogged down in, you can't move these guys.
No, you're not going to be able to trade Ibaka. I don't think they want to give up on any of those young guys unless they find a way to swing a trade for another star. But again, you have to make salaries work, and that's not the easiest thing to do there, because when you look at the guys making all the money, it's like, I'm good.
So Toronto has two choices. They either fire Masai Ujiri, or they fire Dwayne Casey. That's it. Those are the only real choices that they have, unless they can find a deal for Lowry or DeRozan, like you said. And maybe there's a musical chairs with Portland or Washington, or maybe somebody goes to San Antonio and something can be swung for Kawhi. I don't know. But even so, you've got two people that can take the fall, Ujiri and Casey. And I don't think Ujiri, I mean, he's handed out some money here, but I don't think that he's the guy. I think you start with Casey, because Casey has been kind of, you look at his game-to-game adjustments, his in-game adjustments, it's, you can criticize him for a lot of that stuff.
Oh, a lot. He was thoroughly outcoached in this playoff series. There's no other way to say it. And, yeah, you know, it's like you said, there's two options. You got to get rid of one of those guys. And with how capped out they are and everything, what good does firing the GM do at that point, bringing someone in who's going to just kind of, you know, spin the wheels here a little bit? So it kind of is going to be falling on the head of the coach, whether that's fair or unfair.
And I tell you what, if they got a new GM in here, they'd probably fire the coach anyway and start fresh. So
yeah, that's
so
a good point, too.
I think Casey probably gone either way, which is wild, because we'd spent time talking about Casey as the coach of the year, but the Raptors had the perfect storm this season. They had health. They had a good path to the finals. They got Washington first. That was a flawed team that they got past. They had the Cavs. This was the time to beat the Cavs, because that Cavs team is a mess. Even with LeBron, it is a mess. They should have. I know they got swept, but if they had their heads on straight and got regular season performances from these guys, they should have beaten the Cavs, and then they would have gotten either a super young Philly team, but obviously it's probably going to be Boston, super injured. They could have gotten past and gotten to the finals. This was their year to get to the finals.
Yeah, this was their chance, and I don't think another window's like this going to open for them. And yeah, I mean, they'll be competitive, but like not this good like they had it this year, and they blew it. It's as simple as that.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break here and come back to preview the Eastern Conference semifinal game that remains, the Celtics and the Sixers. Let me just remind everybody that you can go find all of your Locked On NFL. If you are a football fan, you can go to find a Locked On NFL, and we are expanding into baseball, so there are Locked On Major League Baseball podcast. The entire network is expanding. So if you are an NFL fan, go search for your favorite team. If you are a Major League Baseball fan, go ahead and search for your team too. If it doesn't exist yet, it will soon, because this network is expanding quickly. So go search for your favorite team on the Locked On Podcast Network. All right, quickly here. Celtics coming back for Game 5 against the Philadelphia 76ers. They're in Boston. First thing, I want to thank the Cavaliers for beating the Raptors and making this an 8 o'clock game instead of a 6 o'clock start. Those 6 o'clock starts suck.
Oh, that's been so weird for me. Brutal. 5 p.m. Central, and I'm like, what is going on?
No, it's terrible. It's terrible. I mean, I know they have to do it because they can't start an Eastern Conference Finals, semifinal game at 9:30, but regardless,
still,
here we are. So
weird.
The home crowd's going to be going. The Celtics definitely play better at home. The Sixers definitely don't play as well on the road. They're barely above 500 on the road during the regular season. So they're not good. They've lost, obviously, in Boston already a couple times. The big questions here are T.J. McConnell was inserted into the starting lineup. I took a close look at that on RedsArmy.com. The Celtics' defense against T.J. McConnell was basically non-existent. And the other thing that the Sixers have done against Al Horford, they've moved Ersan Ilyasova or Dario Saric onto him, defending him because he was just cooking Joel Embiid, just destroying Joel Embiid to a point where no actual observer of the NBA can comprehend how bad that matchup has been. So what do the Celtics do to counter those things? I think with McConnell, it's been just play the defense, that number one defense in the NBA. Again, looking at that game four, they really botched a lot. And I think some of it might have been due to the foul trouble. They got a ton of fouls called on them.
That was a big part of that. Embiid was doing some work down low, and that was like finally his like big, you know, game in this series where he did get those guys in foul trouble and took them out of their rhythm in their gameplay defensively, right?
Yeah, 14 team fouls for the Celtics in the second quarter of that game, one for the Sixers. So that was a big problem because Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, got foul trouble, and those two key guys, that it took away their aggressiveness. You could see that Jaylen Brown was afraid to help on some of those McConnell drives. So if I don't think those whistles go against Boston at home. Referees are influenced by home crowds. That's just kind of known. So I think they get whistled for fewer fouls, so they can help more. They can be more aggressive, which means McConnell probably doesn't get to the rim as much. He's not as open. As for Horford, I would love to see them just figure out a way. Either the Celtics start, maybe they start Jaylen Brown instead of Aaron Baines, and they kind of force Embiid to make a decision and have to play. Because who do you put Embiid on if you're starting Jaylen Brown versus Aaron Baines? He's got to cover Horford. And that may be a simple adjustment that the Celtics do. Jaylen Brown has been a regular starter during the regular season. If he's healthy enough to do it, that might be enough to get Embiid to neutralize that thing, because Saric is going to have to cover Jaylen Brown. Or they set cross screens and run pick and rolls and maybe run some stagger screens and force a newly switching Sixers team to make some decisions. They don't make a lot of great decisions defensively. I think those two things would be enough. And one other thing that the Celtics are looking at from the Celtics perspective is Shane Larkin. He can match if he hurt his shoulder in a collision with Embiid. If he's not ready to go, that's a bit of a problem, because he can match McConnell's energy off the bench. One of those little scrappy guys that just goes in and annoys the hell out of you. So, if Larkin can play and the Celtics can clean that other stuff up, I think they wrap this series up.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the Celtics to win here. I did like with McConnell in the starting lineup, it allowed Ben Simmons to play off ball a little bit more, and he's been shooting so poorly in this series. To get him off cuts and different things and get him better looks that way, I think really helped. He had, 19 points, 13 rebounds in game four, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, and like 7 of 8 free throws, which he hadn't been getting to the line, so.
No, so getting him, doing it that way and not making him shoot J's and different things like that, I think really helps them. But I think, again, with a couple of days here to game plan for it, that's where you're going to see the Celtics defense, best defense in the league, really kick in and try and take that away from them.
Yeah, I really think that the energy, they feed off of that crowd so much. Terry Rozier has had an awesome playoffs, but he's been sketchy on the road. He really responds to the home crowd. Guys like Marcus Morris totally do as well. If they need Semi Ojeleye to come in, if they're shorthanded, he's another guy that will play better at home versus the road. And so we'll see. I think Philly's in too much of a hole, and They've played all their cards. There's nothing else that they can play.
Yeah, there's no like counterpunch to really go out and do, or at least looking at it that we're seeing. And Brett Bounds done a good job all season long. But again, like you said, I think you've seen the cards on the table here, and I think we're ready for this to probably be over.
Yeah, I think Philly, look, and it's been a great learning experience for the Sixers. They're going to take this, and this is part of the growth. So from a Philly perspective, this is something that you can take back and really learn a lot from. Science will always tell you sometimes you learn the most from failures than you do from success. And for a young team to fail like this, you start to figure out, what does Embiid need to do? What does Simmons need to do? What does Brett Brown need to do as a coach? Because he is a good coach. So he'll figure things out. They'll be okay, and we'll see how they progress. But this series, I think, is over, just like this podcast is over. So, as a reminder, you can follow me at RedsArmy_John on Twitter. I am the co-host of the Locked On Celtics podcast. You can find my stuff on RedsArmy.com and Boston.com.
And I'm Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter, host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast and editor over at LockedOnPelicans.com, as well as credential member of the media here in New Orleans.
The Big Boss has tomorrow's show, David Locke, with the Thursday Locked On NBA show. Be sure to subscribe to Locked On NBA. Look for that wherever you have found your podcast. Give it a 5-star rating. Give it a good review. We would really appreciate that. Thanks for listening to the Locked On NBA podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.